You're listening to Raphael Epstein.
We are talking film with Josh Nelson, our resident film critic. You can check out his blog at filmology.com. That's spelled with a PH. Josh, welcome.
Thank you very much.
Now, we're going to get into Paperboy in a moment. Josh urged me to see it. It's got Nicole Kidman and Zac Efron. Have a little listen to a little bit of dialogue. Nicole Kidman walking in. She's basically white trash who's communicating with a prisoner. He's on the inside, she's on the outside, she's never met him, she's in love with him, wants to marry him. She tracks down the journalists who are going to help her free the man she is engaged to. Just have a listen to, I guess, the way she's delivering the lines. Zac Efron and Matthew McConaughey are those among the actors around her.
Where should I put her file?
Everything you need to know about Hillary Van Wedder that's been in the papers is here in these boxes. Now, and our exciting correspondence is in the bottom box, in case you're interested. Mr. Jansen, I really just want to thank you. I want to thank you for replying to my letters and for helping me get Hillary out of that hellhole.
Well, I wouldn't go booking a honeymoon just yet.
Oh.
But we're all going to fight this it in the way it came about.
Thank you.
That's Nicole Kidman as Charlotte, Matthew McConaughey as the investigative journalist who's going to help spring her husband, played by a demented John Cusack. It's a remarkable film. Most of the notoriety this film has attracted is because Nicole Kidman wheezes on Zac Efron. We won't tell you why. Perhaps we will. I don't think that we will. That might spoil the suspense. But I want to hear from you. Films that are defined by one scene or one line, perhaps even the line and the scene becoming more famous than the film. 1300 222 774. I was thinking of Apocalypse Now myself, just the few bars of Ride of the Valkyries perhaps summing up the entire film. But 1300 222 774, a film defined by one scene or one line. Josh, now you urged me to see this.
I did.
I was gripped from beginning to end. Tell us the basic setup and what you thought.
Oh, I'm really relieved that you enjoyed this. It's on a limited screening. It's only screening at the Como and the Nova in Melbourne. But I think it's really good. And judging by the talkback we had last week, there were a lot of anti-Nicole sentiment, and I put my hand up there.
Absolutely. I haven't seen a film of hers I liked.
But she has won me over in this. Okay, so let's cut to the film. I think the best way to describe this film, at least in a genre sense, is it's swamp noir, if you can buy that.
Yep.
You know, most film noir happens in an urban setting, and we have the femme fatale characters, and it's normally about a detective hunting a crime or some such thing like that. This is set in a very hot, humid Florida swamp in 1969. We have the context of civil rights, the movement there. We have second wave feminism and you know, their sexuality rights and all this sort of tumultuous period in American history. And as you mentioned, this is about a woman played by Nicole Kidman who hires, I guess, two journalists to free her. Well, yeah, I guess it's a fiancé played by John Cusack to get
very
him out of
scary,
jail.
Very scary, demented John Cusack.
For a crime he may or may not have committed, and that remains a little bit ambiguous for quite some time. Look, this film won me over for a number of reasons. One, I think, is the way in which it recasts the typical traits of film noir. Because normally you have film noir, the femme fatale character is the duplicitous woman. You know, the woman who pretends she's something, but really she's something else. And, you know, most of the time in film noir, she has to be killed off or domesticated. It's funny because out of all the characters here, she's the least duplicitous. She's the one who pretty much what you see is what you get. And all the other characters are the ones harboring a dark kind of secret or past. And that's the real enigma that I think drives this film. It's the sort of the teasing out of these characters' backstories and histories. And look, the performances, just on a really simplistic level, the performances here across the board really, really great.
Including Macy Gray as the domestic help. She's dynamite.
Which I didn't realize at the time until the credits rolled. I mean, there's a lovely scene. So Macy Gray plays the caretaker for the house that Zac Efron lives in, who's the younger brother of Matthew McConaughey in this. And there's a lovely scene at the beginning where he's lying on his bed as a kind of a teenager, the room's a complete mess. He's in his underwear. She walks
quite
in.
Quite a few scenes of Zac Efron in his underwear. But
there
anyway,
is a number of scenes. Yeah. And she walks in and he sort of tells her not to clean up, and why did she open the door? Because he may have been doing something else. And they have this role reversal where she gets on the bed and starts mocking, like performing white teenage masculinity. And he starts coming in and performing like this sort of the black stereotype caretaker. And that's the joy of this film. It's the way in which it toys with those expectations, toys with those roles and sort of plays them in a really fascinating way. And I mean, maybe she'll bounce it back, but I want to talk about the visual style of this film as well.
Yeah, and look, I've got to say, the most horrifically gripping sex scene where no one actually touches each other that I've ever seen. I was on the edge of my seat. A distinctly both compelling and uncomfortable sex scene between John Cusack and Nicole Kidman with a whole lot of other people in the room. It's very, I couldn't begin to describe it. It's both disturbing and compelling. But look, I want to hear from you too. We'll talk more about the film, but movies that are described by or defined perhaps by one scene, one line, great text, We're on a Mission from God, absolutely the Blues Brothers, of all the gin joints, etc. Yes, definitely. Bueller. Yep, I think that one wins as well. And Carmel's call from, oh, I've never heard of, where's Ben Barth, Carmel?
Near Shepparton.
Okay, what's yours?
Captain.
Oh, yes, definitely. And that's said by Ethan Hawke or the bloke who ended up in House?
Ethan Hawke.
It is, yes. By Ethan Hawke, yes. Yeah. Okay, yeah, I like that one, Carmel. When was the last time you watched it?
I must have watched it 20 times. I love it.
Oh, okay. It's on high rotation. Thanks, Carmel. That's her Saturday night emergency feel-good film, clearly. I'll get to more of your texts very, very soon. I've got a little bit of Nicole Kidman for you to hear, actually. Now, the reason I was so shocked I like this is I really have never liked a film that she's been in before. I thought To Die For was kind of okay, where she's the weather woman. She was asked in a BBC interview why she took on this scene. She's incredibly sexual in this film and incredibly out there. She wees on Zac Efron. She does a whole lot of other things that I can't really say on the radio. And she's stunningly confrontational, I guess, in her outward sexuality. Here's what she said about why she was attracted to characters like that on the BBC.
I suppose as I get older, I get just more, spontaneous in my decisions. And I try to be more abandoned. I made a pledge to myself to be braver as I get older. I don't want to slip into a complacency. I suppose I disassociate from any sort of image or anything like that. I really don't care. I just think I don't want to be on my deathbed going, oh, I wish I'd taken a few more chances.
I just have so much more respect for her as an actor. Talk about the visuals, but also a quick mention on how good she is.
Maybe just on the basis of what she said there, this could be a career turning point. In the same way that I think Mickey Rourke's performance in The Wrestler was a bit of a turning point. And as a really superficial comparison, I think her face of someone who's aging but also trying to look young suits the character of this film, as opposed to the typical one where they sort of the soft focus and everything. Look, the visual style of this is really clever, not just in the sense of the way in which it emulates the time period, because it's I think the film was shot in 16mm. And then expanded to 35 or to with a digital format that's being projected in. So it has a lovely graininess to it, which captures the time period and the setting. But it's not just a stylistic because of sort of glitch. It actually reflects the type of storytelling that's on show here, I guess, because it was, you know, the golden era of Hollywood in the 60s and 70s when they would toy with these types of genres and start to do interesting, sort of challenging work. And this is what this film does in a structural kind of narrative sense, as well as just a visual sense, but it has those lovely staggered zooms and the kind of the graininess of the film stock. The use of soundtrack is very much of the time,
the 60s,
and 70s as well. The other thing I think I overly appreciated here is the relationship between Zac Efron and Nicole Kidman here, because it's that confused relationship which you get from that age difference, where at once she's the object of his sexual desire, but he's also the object of his maternal longing because he doesn't have a mum. So the way in which she manages to stride both of those roles, and I think he does as well, I think he's really impressive in this as well.
Yeah, he's amazing.
As well as Matthew McConaughey, is really quite remarkable. And I think that's a tough thing to pull off, but it's also very much, you know, rooted in that Freudian kind of Oedipal conflict, which you see played out time and time again in film noir.
So, look, I want to get to the films people say are defined by one scene. But just before we do... how do you get that many good performances out of all of those actors? Matthew McConaughey, I mean, I loved him after Magic Mike. You sort of go, oh, actually, he can act. Yep. Zac Efron, who has only ever really been in rubbish before. What do you think, I don't even know the name of the director, but what are they doing to get so many good performances out of every actor? Macy Gray, I didn't even know she's been in films before. They're all good.
Well, I think it's the directorial vision of Lee Daniels, who's only made two films, but he already has two in post-production. He did Precious, which was, I haven't actually seen, but that was supposed to be a performance noteworthy film. And of course, I think it won Best Actress or Best Supporting Actress at the...
That's about the bullied, really large woman.
Yeah.
Who's a student, isn't she?
And apparently her performance in that film is quite remarkable. So there's something about his style, but I think it also comes from having a really honed artistic vision, which isn't bound by studios. You don't watch this film and think, oh yeah, you know, one of the large studios signed off on this. It feels like a film that has managed to maintain its artistic vision, sort of uncompromised as much as it can to get a mainstream release. And of course, having this these run of actors in it certainly hasn't hurt its cause. Yeah.
And look, I just loved all the plot turns. It was just it just kept on going and
going. And the ending, even though for a genre film, it doesn't quite go where you think it's going to go, which I loved.
It's fantastic. Look, so many texts to read out. The Dude Abides in The Big Lebowski, and another Big Lebowski line that I can't really deliver because it's a swear word, but hopefully we all know what it is. Nobody Puts Baby in a Corner, another, of course, defining line. Go Ahead, Make My Day, obvious, but a clear winner. We're going to need a bigger boat. What's we're going to need a bigger boat?
That's Jaws.
Oh, of course. Sorry, of course. And what we have here is A Failure to Communicate. That's from Luke in East Bentley. And one that many of you have texted, the real forerunner and I guess the harbinger of reality TV in a horrible way, this scene.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window. Open it and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell and I'm not going to take this anymore. I want you to get up right now. Get up, go to your windows, open them and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell
and I'm not going to take it anymore. If you haven't seen Network, 1976 film, absolutely remarkable. I recommend it to you all. Patrick's called from Geelong with an absolute classic. Yes, Patrick?
Yeah, actually, I've got two raps, but of course, the horse's head in The Godfather.
Mm-hmm.
And whilst I was waiting, another one came to mind, which is John Travolta in the white suit in Saturday Night Fever.
Yeah, definitely. But that's kind of, I suppose that's a little bit different because that's an image and not a scene. But yeah, I'll definitely give both of those to you, Patrick. Irene has called from Bentley. Hi, Irina.
Hi. On the waterfront, I could have been a contender.
Oh, yes. Oh, fond memories of seeing that at the Valhalla. I like that. When was the last time you saw it?
Last year, I teach it.
Oh, you teach it? Why do you teach it?
It's a film text at Year 12, and we just think it's brilliant.
Yeah, look at this.
And I just love looking at Marlon Brando anyhow.
Oh, yeah, you've got to look up the Marlon Brando profile in The New Yorker by Truman Capote for some truly remarkable reportage. I don't think Marlon Brando ever did a celebrity interview again. It was probably the beginning of the end of the celebrity interview.
On 774 ABC Melbourne, you're listening to Raphael Epstein.
Now, a few of you have been texting in about a Quentin Tarantino film. There's a particularly disturbing scene that I think I still remember thinking I really need to walk out of the cinema. Of course, it's accompanied by this track. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right, here I am. It's very, very, very unpleasant. What's that actor's name again, Josh?
Michael Madsen.
Oh, man, that just I have a distinct memory, actually. I think I ran from the cinema. I was with a friend, I watched that at uni, and it was kind of the only way to get out the disgust when he's torturing that guard. Really, really very, very disturbing. Raymond in Q's got a good one I hadn't thought of. Hi, Raymond.
Hello.
Yes, what's your scene-defining film?
Basic Instinct with Sharon Stone.
Yes, and the scene where she uncrosses her legs. I tell you what, there's an updated version of that, actually, in The Paperboy that will scare the bejesus out of you, Raymond. So, yes, I love that. Sharon Stone's... There was a whole lot of articles for years after that about how planned that was or wasn't as well, wasn't there?
And all the videotapes that wore out at that point because they'd been paused to death.
Are there other videos? I just don't even want to go down that path of conversation.
Nope.
Someone else mentioning, of course, Life is Like a Box of Chocolates.
Do you want a chocolate? I could eat about 1.5 million of these. My mom always said life was like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get.
Yeah, I think I half watched that. I don't think I've ever seen all of Forrest Gump either. Josh, you admitted before you loved it then and hate it now.
Yeah, it's one of those films that I obsessively watched at the cinema, and now I teach as a film and all the evils of American ideology. And
okay, look, we'll continue with you. Oh, I like this one. Open the Pod Bay Doors, Hal, from 2001, though it's said in a slightly different voice. There were some great tweets, actually, on International Women's Day about what if Hal had been a woman. But still, look, another film to quickly mention, Steven Soderbergh's last film, supposedly, called Side Effects. Tell me what it's about and if it's any good.
Yeah, look, a little bit of a sad news, if it's true. I mean, I think he said this for previous ones. Maybe he should have stopped after Magic Mike. This has got an interesting setup. It's also a noirish style of film. It opens with Channing Tatum getting out of prison, and we find out his wife's been waiting for him for 4 years, and he's been done for you know, sort of financial fraud and insider trading. And his wife, played by Rooney Mara, who is the actress in the remake of The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
Yes,
the Hollywood one, yes. Who's quite impressive. And she's suffering through depression, and it seems to have gotten worse when he's released and trying to kind of readjust. So she starts seeing a shrink, played by Jude Law, who's really excellent in this film. And he prescribes her various antidepressants. And at the beginning of this film, probably for the first hour or so, the film sets up quite an interesting interpersonal dynamic between these various characters and raising issues about psychiatry, the prescription of drugs, the way in which drug companies and their relationship and you know, the sort of the bribery and corruption that seems to go on with that in terms of various aspects of the pharmaceutical industry. And it was really fascinating, it, just as a character drama and the way in which these, this sort of the triangle that was developing. And then we have a previous psychiatrist played by Catherine Zeta-Jones sort of enters the fray.
Oh, he likes Catherine Zeta-Jones, doesn't he? Well, she was pretty good in Traffic as well.
Well, he's worked with a few of these actors before. And then for reasons that I haven't quite been able to kind of, you know, work out, everything sort of changes pace about halfway through, and it becomes a fairly stock standard B-grade 80s, 90s film noir sort of thriller. And it was really unsatisfying because it had such a wonderful sort of pace and almost a procedural sensibility to it. And the screenwriter of this, who'd worked with Soderbergh on two of his previous films, Contagion and The Informant, has that sensibility. I've had another critic say to me he thinks Soderbergh just got bored and wanted to finish things.
Right. Yeah.
And maybe that's what you get when you are a director who's as prolific as Soderbergh, that maybe some projects don't get the full attention and the polish that they probably deserve. But it is really frustrating and unsatisfying. And it also does one of my sort of pet hates with cinema, where it plays out a scene which is clearly for the audience, and it's not framed as a fantasy or there's no moral grey area in terms of what we're supposedly seeing. And then as the narrative starts to unravel and the revelations come out, it's clear that it couldn't have played out like that, but it never comes back to sort of suggest that it was anything different. So
it's not as bad as the rewind in Savages, is it?
Not quite, but it's almost in that in that sort of territory. And
it's the same as saying he woke up and it was all a dream.
The get out of jail free card. And look, the one positive I should say, given that we had a caller a couple of weeks ago who says you don't talk enough about score. The score in this film by Thomas Newman is really excellent. It's kind of a shame it's attached to a film that's sort of subpar, but wonderfully, really unnerving, disconcerting. Reminded me a lot of Howard Shore's score for the David Cronenberg film Crash. Really clever score. Look, worthwhile. Jude Law continues his good run, but maybe
not so good.
Maybe not for cinema.
Okay. Look, that is Side Effect or Side Effects?
Side Effects.
Steven Soderbergh's last film, supposedly he's not going to make another one. I think he's made one a year for 20 years. The other film we mentioned, I know many of you are calling, the one with Nicole Kidman and Zac Efron, it's called The Paperboy. It's on a bit more of a limited release. Josh Nelson is our film critic. You can check out his blog at filmology.com. That's with a PH. The movies we mentioned were The Paperboy with Nicole Kidman. Side Effects is Steven Soderbergh's latest and last, perhaps. And Josh's scene-defining film?
Has to be the shower scene from Psycho.
Indeed, many of you texted in. Oh, tell him he's dreaming. Yes, of course, we didn't mention that one either. Look, thanks for coming in, Josh. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
We'll do film again the same time next week.